Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. At least 2 million women suffer from fistula, and there are about 50,000 to 100,000 new cases of the condition each year. Experts say obstetric fistula is one of the most devastating and serious of all childbirth injuries. Women who suffer from the condition cannot control the urine or feces. On today's program, we will take a close look at obstetric fistula and how it can be prevented or treated. Joining us via phone from San Jose, California is Kate Grant, CEO of the Fistula Foundation. Ms. Grant, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Lenore.
It's great to have you once again on the program anytime. And also joining us via phone from Mansa, Zambia, is Bwalya Chomba, Program Director for the Fistula Foundation in Zambia. Ms. Bwalya Chomba, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on the program. So we'll start discussing fistula in a moment. But first, VOA's Winnie Cirino looks at the condition from South Sudan.
Obstetric fistula is a hole between a woman's reproductive organ and rectum that is caused by prolonged obstructed labor, leaving a woman unable to control urine or feces. Dr. Samson Baba, Special Advisor to National Health Minister Riak Guy Kok, says fistula is painful and humiliating for women.
A lady who suffers from this will be having leakage of urine and feces. And in most cases, she's also rejected by the community and even husbands. And the communities normally shun them.
Baba believes far more South Sudanese women and girls suffer from fistula than what is being reported, especially in rural communities. He says the government and aid agencies have been carrying out awareness campaigns since 2006 so that people understand the causes and symptoms of obstetric fistula. Siti Lina, a nurse in the gynecology ward at Juba Teaching Hospital, says the hospital has yet to register any cases of fistula this year. Speaking in Arabic, Lina says last year medical workers at the hospital treated young girls suffering from fistula as a result of rape, including a five-year-old girl who was raped in Yambu and rushed to Juba Teaching Hospital.
Last year in April, we had about 4 cases of fistula. The majority were during birth, during deliverance that take longer time. That's when a mother does not deliver immediately. It is also common among young girls who give birth at 17 to 20 years old. And at times, we also receive raping cases where 5-year-old girls are raped and also brings fistula.
Dr. Steven Mauer, a reproductive health specialist with the UN Population Fund, says his agency has registered more than 60,000 fistula cases across the country, but it is more common among communities that practice early child marriages.
If we don't address the root causes, we should not expect a reduction, because we are already talking about more than 60,000 women living with this condition. We are trying to treat, but the rate of treatment is not commensurate with the rates of new cases happening.
Mawa says UNFPA provides contraceptives and maternal medicines to South Sudan hospitals. He urges parents to keep their daughters in school so that they can avoid early child marriage and early pregnancies, and urges communities to make sure that women deliver babies with the help of skilled birth attendants. For VOA News, I am Winnie Cirino in Juba.
Again, ladies, thank you so much for joining us. Kate, let me start with you. You have been working on the issue of fistula for many years. I've known you to head the organization for a while. What are your thoughts in terms of how far we've come before we even get into what the condition is?
Well, Nord, thank you. It's great to be with you again. I was thinking the first time I think we talked was 11 or 12 years ago.
I know.
It's been a while, but it's great to connect with you again.
Thank you.
We've made a lot of progress, so I certainly don't want to describe the glass as being sort of half empty here. I would say in the last couple of decades, one of the things that's extraordinary is the fact that the world's attention is now on fistula in a way that it wasn't. For instance, 25 years ago, the UN had its last major conference on population and development, the so-called Cairo Conference, in Cairo, and that was in the summer of 1994. And they came out of that conference with a plan of action that was, I think, roughly 180 pages long. And if you ran a word search on that document that covered really all facets of reproductive health, population, development, migration, in any case, you run a word search on that, you will not find the term obstetric fistula, fistula in that document. The world, the UN, was not paying attention to it. Those couple million women with fistula were paying attention to it every hour of every day, but the world wasn't paying attention to it. So fast forward 25 years later, the UN actually has a campaign that it started over a decade ago to end obstetric fistula. They have a international day to end obstetric fistula that we just celebrated the fifth anniversary of the 25th of May. Again, focusing attention on this issue. So there's the positive. We've got resources coming privately and through public channels, like through the UN and the U.S. government, that weren't there a decade ago or a little longer than that ago. So tremendous progress on that front. But as the story that led this segment indicated, there's more cases of women with this issue every year, and we don't have enough support, both private organizations like ourselves as well as government organizations like the UN and U.S. government don't really have the resources they need to treat this problem effectively. So mm-hmm. that's the negative. As far as Fistula Foundation, obviously the organization I've been with for almost 15 years and have helped build, I'm gratified, I guess, that in the last a dozen years, we've basically taken the number of cases we're treating every year up by a factor of five. In other words, we're helping treat five times more women than we did 10 years ago, and last year we were up by 20% of cases over the previous year. So we are bullish, if you will, in the terms of Wall Street, about where we are going as an organization, mm-hmm. but still humbled by the scale of the problem. And just as one sort of footnote that I think is important is, we know how to treat this problem. The reason that it's not getting enough attention is that it affects a certain class of human beings,
yeah.
and that is women, poor women in rural parts of poor countries, some of the least empowered human beings on the planet. And the core of what we do is the strong belief, deeply held, that they deserve compassion and they deserve treatment. They were simply trying to bring a child into the world when they were grievously injured. They certainly don't deserve the rejection of their families, their husbands, their communities.
Yeah, so, and there, I mean, there's so much to say about this, and we are going to delve into it further. Balia, I would like to come to you and ask you, what is the situation in your country in terms of women, and how many women does this problem affect?
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for having me. It's good to connect with you, Kate, and discuss this important problem. So in our country, Zambia, so far there hasn't been a study to show exactly the prevalence and the estimates of what how the problem is affecting the women of Zambia. But we feel about 1,000 cases are being developed in a year. So these are women who are having obstetric fistula in our country, about 1,000 or so, but there hasn't been a clear estimate. It's now that when we have gone out deeply into the problem, that's when we are able to see that so many women are affected with this problem in our country.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And Kate, I know we talked in the report. It was mentioned, and also a little bit in my introduction. But if we want to really understand fistula, because to think that women will get an obstruction and get that injury and not be able to hold themselves, it's really hard to fathom, to comprehend. So can you please give us a sense of how this really affects a woman's health?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that in your setup piece that they described was the incontinence, and there's no easy way to talk about this, and I don't care whether you're in Dubai or Dallas, nobody wants to talk about incontinence. It's a sort of a taboo subject that cuts across cultures, but in this case, we have to talk about it because that's what the injury produces. Virtually all the women with fistula are incontinent of urine. About 20% of them are also incontinent of feces, and with a slight warning for your viewers here, what that means is that the women actually have bodily waste, urine, in some cases urine combined with feces, that's actually draining out through their vagina. So this isn't like the kind of stress incontinence that some of us might be used to after childbirth or whatever. This is actually a constant stream of bodily waste through the birth canal. And as your setup piece said, unfortunately, in an environment where you don't have the kind of coping mechanisms that might be available in a developed country that has access to sanitary hygiene products, these Depend pads, these basically like adult diapers that can help with people that have sustained injuries that have left them with incontinence in, again, in the U.S. or in Europe or whatever, a woman in a rural area is not going to have that. She's not going to have hot running water to be able to wash herself easily. She's not going to have a closet full of clothes to be able to change into a fresh dress or a, you know, washer dryer there to you know, launder the clothes that become soiled with her own waste. And so what ends up happening is that too often, as your setup piece described, the woman becomes an outcast. You know, often there's some family member that will befriend her, a mother, a father, maybe a husband will stay with her, a sibling. Sometimes they're just left alone, but it's devastating, not just, again, the physical injury, which would be hard enough as it is, but then that coupled with the sort of psychological wounds that are profound. I mean, mm-hmm. the largest hospital up in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, when they were testing patients, 90% of them came in clinically depressed, which is understandable given how horrible this injury is. Is that kind of helpful? Is that what you were?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And it's just very terrible. I've covered this topic so many times, right? Each time, it's as if I was covering it the first time. Just the effect, the impact. To think of the woman, what they're going through, it's just horrible. And Bwalya, when you look at your culture, your community, in your society, the causes of fistula have been said to be, among other things, prolonged labor. And then there is a cultural aspect to it. There is child marriage and other issues. What are some of the most common causes in Zambia, at least in the community you serve?
The most common causes of obstetric fistula in the communities which we are serving in Zambia is prolonged obstructed labor. But we have contributing factors to this, one of them being early marriages. You'll find that parents with female children mostly marry them off at tender ages, between maybe the age of 12 and 16, to claim the bride price, which is either paid in monetary form or in kind. And then we also have traditional beliefs. Like, I would give an example of what is called insula in the northern part of Zambia. This is when prolonged obstructed labor is attributed to the unfaithfulness of the husband or the partner who impregnated that woman. So instead of taking the woman to the health facility, they will waste time forcing the man to confess or looking for people that know the herbs to make that person deliver, thereby increasing the chances of that woman to have a fistula. Mm-hmm. So you find that the worst time that woman is in labor, the first day, the second day, that's when they make that decision to take the woman to the facility. And also there are other issues like the fear of cesarean death by some women. As in our culture, it is seen as not being woman enough. A woman who cannot deliver through the vagina is considered to be a very lazy woman, and somebody will bring shame to the in-laws. So you find that when the woman is pregnant and going for antenatal care, when she goes to the clinic, she's told that she's supposed to deliver from a bigger hospital where she can access a cesarean bed. So you find that she will hold back, she will not go, because she will be fearing to go and have that cesarean bed, as it will be attributed to being lazy or not being woman enough. And then also we have the inadequate skilled healthcare providers in most of the facilities. Talk of the rough terrain, the bad roads. You find that these women mostly who have fistula, the places where they are coming from are very far from facilities where they can access emergency obstetric care. And if they have to access that, again, they have to travel another distance to ensure that they get this. So these are some of the major contributing factors to fistula here in Zambia, in the communities which we are serving.
Okay. Now let's talk about solutions, and which is what the Fistula Foundation has been working on for the most part, looking at how to address this. And I know, Kate, you touched on it earlier, but can you talk to us about, first of all, the areas? I know you work in several countries, but how do you choose first the countries where you work? And then from there, we'll talk about some of the programs, and we'll also go to Bwalya to look at what she's doing on the ground. But first of all, talk to us about how you choose countries.
Well, we actually have a sort of two-track strategy, Lenore. And so I would say rather than the first track of that strategy is to work with hospitals that are doing high-quality work and need financial support no matter where they are geographically. So really the first track of that strategy is we start with the idea of helping hospitals that have patients. So that's where we can make kind of the biggest difference on the margin, which is finding good quality doctors, good quality hospitals that have just a population of these indigent patients, and we can help with just fueling those hospitals with money. The second track of the strategy, though, is one where we have picked individual countries, and Bwalya is doing a terrific job in Zambia, and I'm so glad she's on this program, can talk about the great work she's doing with her team there. But we've so far picked two countries. The first was Kenya, and the second was Zambia, where we've launched countrywide treatment networks to really try to tackle fistula at a country level and to really end it in given countries. And how we pick those countries, the first one, Kenya, frankly, we had a corporate supporter that was interested in Kenya. So that country was sort of picked for us. And actually, interestingly, I think it wouldn't have been the first country we would have picked because it's a relatively developed country in sub-Saharan Africa. It is, for instance, in the UN's kind of high, middle, and low-income country way of sort of categorizing countries. It's actually in the middle-income sort of category. So we would have gone someplace where we thought there was greater need. But again, this country was picked for us. And what's been astounding about the program, and the reason we're replicating it in Zambia, is that over the first 3 years of the program, we did twice the number of surgeries that we thought we were going to do. And the countrywide program strategy is really to marry the things that we think are needed, and this, which is to have a countrywide network of hospitals, to invest in training surgeons, and to invest in robust outreach activities so we can get those women that are out in those distant villages living too often lives of despair that they certainly don't deserve. So I hope that's clear.
Yes, absolutely. And Bwalya, as Kate mentioned, you're doing a good work on the ground. If you can please share with us the program that you're heading, how are you able to address this issue, especially given the fact that a lot of it has to do with culture and tradition?
So in Zambia, the project was launched in 2017, the one which goes up to 2019 December. So we are looking at developing an integrated network that improves access to fistula treatment and builds long-term health system capacity for the care and prevention of fistula in Zambia. So we have a comprehensive program designed here in Zambia, which is focused on four core pillars, which is outreach, treatment, training, and reintegration. So when we talk about outreach, because this problem here in Zambia, you find that it was not so much talked about. People did not know, because this is a condition where a woman is living in shame, in isolation. So when we do community outreach, we thought of doing a community engagement strategy so as to bring everyone on board. So this we are doing through the community health volunteers and the Safe Motherhood Action Group ambassadors, whom we've trained, and they are the ones who have enhanced community awareness to reduce stigma and increase patient identification and referral. So when we go into a community, we identify these people. We partnered with the Ministry of Health. We are working with the Ministry of Health, so we are working through the structures of the Ministry of Health of Zambia, and they are already established community structures. So when we went to the ministry, they gave us pointers to certain districts where we are, especially in Lwapula. That's where we have we are implementing more of this program. So when we were given the pointers, we went into these communities, and then we had to identify. We've involved everyone. We've brought everyone on board, like the community leaders. We've known that these are the people who are the gatekeepers, and they hold much opinion. So we've brought them, and we're working so closely with them in order to sensitize the communities and identify the women who are living with fistula. And then we also have a fistula treatment strategy. So under the fistula treatment strategy, we've engaged six primary referral treatment centers, which are all government hospitals. We partnered with them, and this is where we are referring these women who have got obstetric fistula. And these are also working as places for training. As the surgeons, they'll gather together when we've identified the women and referred, and then they'll do surgery together. So this is an opportunity to increase on the capacity of the surgeons. Then apart from treatment, we are also doing surgeon and health provider training. Three Zambian fistula surgeons so far have been trained through the Federation of International Gynes and Obs Program, FIGO. They were trained from Kenya, all sponsored by Fistula Foundation. And then we're also doing mentorship programs. So these are the ones who are working with the already existing surgeons to be going around to treat these women. And in some places, in some treatment centers, you'll find that when the skill of the surgeon has gone up, you'll find that we are doing routine surgery. Women are now able to go and access treatment on their own. So we come in to support them with transport and also fistula care packs as they are going to access treatment. And we just don't end on treatment. When they are out of the hospital, we make sure that we follow them up with follow-up to ensure, to look at how they are doing in the community and also on the reintegration aspect. Because when they have this fistula, they are living in shame, they are in isolation, they are not fully participating in the functions of the community.
Yeah.
So we ensure that we come in as an organization, as Fistula Foundation, with the community health volunteers we have and other staff members, we ensure that we come in to counsel these women and also to follow them up in their communities and sensitize the communities where they are coming from, that they are now okay and they are expected to be reintegrated as any other person in the community. So you find that in Zambia, the approach we are using is multifaceted. Every person is important in our work. It's not just the surgeons or us, the workers at the Fistula Foundation, but everyone has taken a step and is also working together to ensure that these women access treatment and help.
That's a comprehensive approach there, and we really wish you the best in terms of the work that you're doing for more impact. Kate, I wanted to ask you, because I know that the organization had launched the Action on Fistula campaign, which was supposed to be from May 2017 to April 2020, to provide surgeries to more women. How is that? What is the update?
Yeah, it's going great. As you said, we are in basically the sixth year of this program. We just started the sixth year, and officially it'll come to an end a year from now. But I don't think we're going to end it, which is it's as long as we're getting the number of women we are getting in for treatment, we're going to keep at it. I was there a year ago and met a woman who was 58 years old and had had her fistula for 34 years.
Yeah.
She was maybe 2 miles off of a paved road. She wasn't that far from a facility. And again, this was Kenya, a relatively prosperous sub-Saharan African country. The delight on her face, Lenore, why still, it cheers me. In fact, I was back in Kenya about a month ago and we're out kind of near her village and saw her again. And she's still beaming, as you can imagine, after living a life of such misery. Her lovely husband actually had stuck with her for all that time. But as long as there are women like that in Kenya that we can get to and reach, we're going to keep at it. The program in Zambia is really, as I said, it's kind of a lift-repeat of that model with an extraordinarily talented team in Zambia really running that program. Wiley is in charge of that, and like I said earlier, doing a great job. The one thing I did want to mention about Zambia is the reason we were able to go into Zambia was because of support from Johnson & Johnson. They're really funding the lion's share of that program in Zambia. It's some of our money, but most of it's their money. And so what's stopping us, Lenore, from going into more countries the way we've gone into Zambia is one word, money. If we had more money, and we're raising more money all the time, but these countrywide programs, as you can imagine, trying to get a network of hospitals, training, outreach, et cetera, are expensive compared to just funding individual hospitals, which is that first track of our strategy that I was mentioning earlier. So as we acquire more money through dogged pursuit, I say we're like Robin Hoods in heels here because most of our team's women, but as we get more money, we're going to fund more programs like this successful program, Action on Fistula, in Kenya, as well as the program in Zambia.
Mm-hmm. And treating fistula is really something that is not that complicated, right? Training surgeons, it's done through surgery mainly. Is that correct?
It's true. Really, the only cure for fistula is surgery. You're basically dealing with holes. That's what produces the incontinence. Fistula, the medical term, actually is somewhat generic. Obstetric is what makes it about childbirth, obstetric fistula. But fistula just medically is a term for a hole between an internal organ and the outside world that shouldn't exist. So what those surgeons are doing is going and sewing those holes up, and surgery is the only way to fix this. So yes, surgeon training is important, and that's something we've invested in from the beginning, and we're doing, as Wiley was saying, in Zambia, we've certainly done in Kenya and other countries. Critical.
And Bwala, I wanted to ask you about how you are able to make a change in terms of the root causes when it comes to culture. Because if you provide service and you are treating it, it's great, but are you able to have some success in terms of changing mentality, changing behavior, changing culture?
Yes, we are having success in that. We've scored some achievements through training. We've trained the community health volunteers, about 329. We have done 3,200 outreach visits. We have involved 960 local leaders across. We are doing radio hotspots where we've recorded radio programs. So we are giving out more information, even through IEC material distribution. So you'll find that these people now, they have access to information, which was a problem. If a person doesn't have access to information, it will be very difficult to change. But with the information which is being given out, and it's consistent, it's not just given out for a week and it stops. This is the information which has now been preached. This is the third year which we are doing that. So we can see some changes in the way people are approaching things. Even in the way records are coming up in the centers where we are operating from, we are seeing more of institutional deliveries. We are seeing more involvement of the community leaders. We are seeing more involvement of the chiefs who are now ambassadors and coming out to speak about fistula. Okay. So you can be able to see that really something is happening, there's a change happening.
Okay, and Kate, we're going to wrap, but quickly, how do people get more information?
A simple way to do that is simply to go to our website, fistulafoundation.org. If you actually just even put in fistula as a word, we usually come up very first, if not, in the Google search. The UN has a website, too. I think, frankly, ours, just because we have more people and more resources, is a richer, more robust website. So fistulafoundation.org, or even just Fistula, find out how you can get involved.
Kate Grant, CEO of the Fistula Foundation, Bwalya Chomba, Program Manager in Zambia. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks so much, Lenore.
And thanks to all of you for listening on this edition of Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Bonsa Tufa. Until next time, take care. Be well and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA News. I'm Liz Pelka.
I personally had to shoulder much of the responsibility.
That's Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, offering an apology Tuesday for the political crisis and on